What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Defocus Media Podcast. You know, so many of us are inspired to own our own practice someday, but we might start out thinking like, oh, I need to work for someone else first and get in these jobs where it's harder and harder to leave. And then that dream of practice ownership becomes more and more of a distant thought and something that we're not making into reality. So we brought on a guest here that has made it happen for herself and is so passionate about inspiring others to do so as well. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Melanie Denton.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So Dr. Denton, I really want to go in because you are such a spokesperson for the empowering opportunity of owning your own practice. How did you start out of school? Is this something that you did as a cold start or what moved you to make that decision?
Yeah, so I have definitely not always had a strong voice about this, and it's nice to hear you say that because I just recently feel like I can try to inspire other people to do it as well. I knew all along that I wanted to open a practice, or not so much open a practice, but be the owner of a practice. Like, that was never a question for me. From the very beginning, that was my goal. I just was so afraid. I mean, I was crippled by the fear of, you know, what all the steps were and the financial piece of it. You know, just I didn't even know where to begin before. And so now that I've opened Cold, we just had our 2-year anniversary. And now that I've done it, I feel like I want to be a voice so that anyone else is thinking of doing it, that I can kind of just be a resource and be a voice to say, no, you can do it. And you're not going to be broke for 10 years. Like, it is a good idea.
So that's so encouraging because 2 years in and you can kind of already see like, yeah, this is a financially appropriate decision that I made. There's no doubt in your voice at all. So that's super exciting to hear for myself.
Yeah. I mean, anyone I ever talked to that had started Cold, or even people that hadn't started Cold, I feel like the whole idea around that is like, oh my gosh, number one, it's crazy. And number two, you're just going to be broke forever. Like, just, you know, kiss everything you like goodbye. You're going to be eating ramen and that's it for like a long time. But it's really not like that at all.
So what were you doing before you decided to open Salisbury Eye Care and Eyewear Cold?
Okay, so I started by getting a residency, or, you know, doing a residency down at Bascom Palmer. So I had done that my very first year out of school. And then after that, I was pretty focused on, okay, I'm going to find a practice to buy. So I've only ever really been in private practice other than some like fill in on weekends and things like that. So I started at one private practice with the intention to buy it. And about a year after that, I realized that he wasn't close enough to retirement to really make that happen. So then I moved on to another private practice that seemed closer to wanting to sell. And then that just didn't really, you know, it just didn't work out. So during that process, I decided that I needed to be more business savvy, essentially. So when I was in the second private practice, I started an MBA at night. So I would see, you know, patients all day in the clinic and then go to my classes 2 to 3 nights a week. But I thought that getting the MBA would really help me with the confidence and the ability to think about business decisions. And it did ultimately. But that's kind of where I've been, you know, between 2009 when I graduated and 2016 when my doors opened, I was working at different private practices, seeing what worked and didn't, and then getting an MBA at night to help with the process.
What do you think? Because your path really kind of speaks to me about this. Traditionally in school, we were kind of taught to think, okay, you want to go into practice ownership. The path to practice ownership is you go to work for an older doctor who you imagine will be retiring, and then you'll eventually buy that out. Do you see that as the primary path to ownership these days, or do you see opening Cold as a person's best opportunity?
I don't know if I can say what's best, because I think that so much of that depends on the location and the situation. So I don't think that that's best for everyone or best as a whole, but I know positively that it was best for me.
I know we were told in school opening Cold basically is a bad idea. Do you feel like that is such a terrible, I mean, obviously you did it and it was successful. Why do you think it had that rap of being a bad idea in the past?
So I think it has a really bad rap because it is really hard. And I think that it's only something you should do if you have the right kind of personality for it and the right passion for it. I don't think necessarily that you can say starting Cold is always the answer, or buying, you know, someone close to retirement's practice is always the answer, because it's going to depend individual person. So when I made the decision, kind of the timeline of how this happened was that I'd been in private practice for a little while working for other people. I was about to finish my MBA. So I was in the last semester of it. And it was like January 5th of 2015. I sat down with a notebook and I wrote on the front page, I will own a practice by this day next year. Like in the next year, this will happen. And so then I had to figure out like, you know, what are the steps to doing that? You know, finish the MBA was first. Choose a town, you know, the second after that, choosing the town, I looked at every OD and MD practice in the area because I still didn't see myself opening a practice cold. So even like a year out from opening cold, I wasn't ready to do that. I was so afraid to do it. And I talked to everyone in town, but nobody was ready to sell their practice essentially. So it was finally like July of 2015 where, you know, I got kind of the last no. And I was like, okay, fine. I'm doing this. You know, I promised myself I would do this by January 5th of 2016. So this is happening if I have to start cold. And I just did it. I just started taking the steps to do it at that point.
I know that resonates really well with Daryl. He's so big of a believer. If you commit like this is going to happen and you put that idea down on paper, there's like a power in that statement that that's going to happen. It's so exciting to hear other people have that same experience where like you made that commitment and you're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen once you've made that official commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once I started, I was like, oh my God, what have I done? It's too late to stop.
So kind of going back in time, you made that idea that we're going to open cold now. You're all in. What did you do first? Because that first step seems like the scariest.
So I had chosen the town. I was already there and I had done the demographic studies at that point. So I already kind of had an understanding of the branding for the practice and kind of where I wanted to position in the marketplace. So I already kind of had a sense of that. And those are some of the first steps, I think. And then, you know, doing the paperwork, like finalizing a name, sending that into the board, finding a location. I basically decided what part of town I was going to be in. And then I looked at every single space that was on the market for sale and for rent. I talked to local business owners and found out which spaces were potentially coming up for rent or had been unoccupied for a while. I mean, I just literally looked at every potential place to put my practice. So that was a huge bit of time there, but you know, between like August and September, I signed on the lease in October. So, and I became incorporated like October 4th. So I don't know, that was all happening between July and October. And then at the same time, you're kind of planning space planning and flow planning and systems for the office, how you want things to run, figuring out what is my phone system going to be and what am I going to use for a credit card machine? And, you know, I need bank accounts and, oh, the loan. That's a huge part. I forgot about the loan.
So you had to kind of take a business plan, I guess, to the bank and then try to negotiate. But you already pre-planned like it's going to cost this much for this and this much for this. Talk us through that process.
Yeah. So actually that process started earlier. One good thing about the MBA was having access to the professors that I had access to. And so, you know, I did work with a marketing professor of mine who really helped with the concept and, you know, set me on the right track of here's what you're going to need to do in the first year. You want to build brand awareness and, you know, that's the first thing. But also on the financial side, I had a professor that said, you need to figure out what your expenses are going to be. I was able to run my business plan by them. So that was all done by the time I really started looking at spaces. I had the business plan completely written. I had the pro forma started. And in North Carolina in particular, there's a state-sponsored program for people who start businesses and people who own businesses. It's free. It's through the public colleges, but I was also using them as well. So I did not use a Williams group or Climate. I didn't use a practice starting group. I don't know what they call themselves, but I didn't use anybody like that. I just was using my own resources through what's available here in North Carolina and then my school. So the business plan definitely is one of the first steps. I actually interviewed like 5 different banks. So, you know, and I had key points that I wanted to know. And I ended up going with a bank that has an entire optometry division because I felt like that was really helpful to me. They knew optometry practices. They knew my chance of succeeding. You know what I mean? They were just able to, like, they knew what was going on better than in my case, in contrast to an SBA type of loan where they're working with all kinds of different businesses, whereas the bank I went with worked, you know, solely with optometrists.
That's awesome. Because, like, when you think about going in with the loan, I guess my idea of it was just like, oh, I just got to find someone who's willing to give me that money. But you really going into the mindset of like, I'm shopping you. Like, you guys are competing for me as a business client here. So you kind of came at it at a different mindset.
Yeah. So that's something I learned. I've read a lot of books on negotiation because I'm not the best negotiator, but that is a total shift in focus that I think is really important. So it is, it's like, no, if I take out a loan with your bank, you're going to be making money off of me. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's that shift in focus where it's like, no, this is actually good for both of us. And so I'm going to interview you. I did the same thing with, I actually negotiated my own lease. And, you know, even in speaking with a landlord, I think that's something that's really important to keep in mind. Think about the value that you're bringing to that landlord, right? You're filling his space. You're signing a contract for multiple years, and you want to multiply that out and say, no, the contract I'm signing here is a $150,000 contract. Like, let's talk about this because I need to get what I need out of this. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, as business or retail location owners, these people that have these massive spaces, a healthcare entity as a leaser, oh my gosh, they love that because that is a stable long-term commitment. That's money they can always count on coming in. So you kind of knowing you're going in with that negotiating power in the lease, we need to know we're negotiating from that situation of influence.
Exactly. You can't be intimidated. You have to realize that you're bringing value. Bringing a business to a community is a very positive thing. And, you know, in my case, I put my business downtown. Well, that's a good thing for downtown. And anything that I do to market helps our downtown area, not in a, you know, maybe a huge way, but all these little positive things. A downtown wants their businesses, their spaces full of small businesses. So, you know, I even went to our downtown association and talked to them as much as possible, kind of said like, you know, what can you do for me? If I put my business downtown, what are you going to do? Are you going to push it out on Facebook? Are you going to include me in events? You know, I really want to make sure that my name and my brand, my logo is getting out there.
How did you find the reception when you went to like the Chamber of Commerce or the Downtown Association?
Awesome. Yeah, my area has a wonderful Chamber of Commerce. I'm actually on the board now, so I'm a little biased, but no, they're absolutely wonderful and welcoming, brought us into every event they could. I did a business after hours at my location. So very, very helpful.
So one of the other things I want to circle back on, you talked so much before about how the MBA course really prepared you with getting access to mentors and mentorship. How did you decide on which MBA course to do? And I know some of the optometry schools now have a associated program with it.
Yeah. So here's the thing with me. I feel like I learn, I love listening to optometry podcasts or, you know, reading optometry articles. I feel like there's so much to learn within the industry, but I also feel like we can learn so much from other industries as well. So usually when I'm choosing books, I like to read, you know, business-centered books or tech startup books. I like to draw information from other sources. And that for me was the power of the MBA program that I was in because, you know, I was the only optometrist in the program. There were maybe a couple of other healthcare practitioners there. But for the most part, I mean, I was working with mid-level managers from factories. We had someone from like FBI or IRS. We had like government entities, different people there. We had people with accounting backgrounds. And so I really enjoyed just, you know, the group discussions that came from that and sort of grasping concepts from different industries. So when you think about like operations and systems within a factory, they're looking at efficiency and it's just bringing those concepts into an office. Whereas I think sometimes if you're just surrounded, not just, but if you're surrounded by optometrists, we're all we know our craft, we know the optometry business. And you know what I'm saying? You just don't get like that outside experience. coming into play. So that was the power of my MBA that I loved. And I really, really loved, I love the class on operations. Business law was incredible. There was one just solely focused on how teams and groups interact, which staff is one of the hardest things in a practice. And so that particular course was really, really fascinating. So I think, you know, if my optometry school had an MBA program, I probably would have wanted to be in it. So I think it is a good thing. I know some of the schools do have programs. I think that would be really helpful. But it's also a good idea afterward, if you decide that you want to own a business, to maybe do an executive MBA or a nighttime MBA like I did.
Absolutely. I can definitely see where your practice, and when I see the branding and social media aspect of it, you've drawn so much of that influence from having the outside perspective. You're so right. In optometry, we read the articles by the same people. We're inspired to do and learn from some of the same colleagues. And so all of our offices end up kind of looking the same after a while, because we're taking the same ideas over and over again. And you come in with these fresh ideas from outside, and your office is really benefiting from that fresh perspective. Can you talk a little bit about how you decided with the styling and the branding with what you did? If you guys aren't following her already, you really need to take a look at Sawsberry Eye Care and Eyewear on their Instagram accounts and their social media, because it is something that Daryl and I reference all the time when we talk about like the very best social media platform for optometrists.
Thank you for that. That makes me feel really good. So I took a cue from bloggers, actually, like you. I mean, I stalked you before you knew me online to kind of see what you were doing. So bloggers have this way of kind of making their brand go viral that I think is really interesting. And I study that like crazy. I'm always downloading like the little guides about here's the must-have apps that I couldn't live without. And so I've definitely drawn from that for my Instagram and my social media stuff. As far as the branding of the place, I just really wanted my office to be, number one, really different from the norm. And I wanted it to feel like home. Like I wanted it to feel like a boutique where you just want to shop and hang out and get a cup of coffee. So that was sort of the arching idea. I also drew a lot from my downtown. So I'm in downtown Salisbury and I'm right next to the train track. I'm at the corner of Council and Depot Street. So the train depot is right down from me. And with having the rail right there, I wanted to kind of have this vintage industrial feel. My building, I don't know, it's like 100 years old or more. It's a historical building in our town. So I wanted to kind of mix that vintage with industrial, which is where the design aspect came from. And then I wanted it to be different and something I could change up all the time. So I didn't do any frame boards. I did zero, which was a big thing for the design. And I did like shelving.
And there's people listening that like literally their jaw probably just dropped when you said that.
Yeah, I just, you know, that was really big for me. I wanted it to be just so much different. And if you look at like boutiques and how they display things, they'll have like a vintage table or a vintage like coat rack, and then they'll display some of the, you know, clothing there or jewelry there. And then obviously other stuff is hung up. Well, it's the same kind of concept for me. I have these little like, you know, nose and lip statue thingies, like carvings that I display the glasses on, and a ton of cake plates, actually. Those are really great for displaying glasses. So I just really wanted to get creative, and it's nice because I can change it up, and I do all the time.
So have you found that, you know, it's one thing, I think where optometrists traditionally do well is we're really good at bringing patients in as far as like, I want to schedule an eye exam. Oh, here's an optometrist. I'm going to go there. But maybe not so good at bringing retail customers into our optical. Have you found a big influx of people just like stopping by to shop?
Yeah, we do. I'm not right on the main road in our town, and so I don't get as much walk-in as I might otherwise. But we do have a lot of folks that come in with their prescription just kind of because they've heard of our place and they've heard that our glasses are completely different. I think the social media campaign helps a ton with that because we're always posting our glasses. And I produce all of my own content. I think that's another thing that's getting off track, but with social media, and this is a lot of work, but producing all of your own content is really, really key. I don't like using pictures online, just like grabbing photos. I really, really like them to be in our setting because I just think it adds an extra touch. But we have people come in and show me my Instagram and say, I want these. So it's pretty cool.
I really appreciate you saying that because it's something that Daryl and I talk about so much all the time. Many offices that are doing social media will say like, oh, it's you know, not really anything that's working for us, but they're not using in-office personally curated images. So if it looks like stock photos, it's probably not going to do anything for you. Mm-hmm. It's just so powerful to hear you say like, I'm putting this work into social media, taking the pictures in my office. And then, yeah, it's tapping returns. People are coming in with the picture saying, I want this.
Exactly. I mean, I'll go up on a Saturday and just take all the frames down and just take photos of all of them and then come home and sit on PicMonkey and watermark them. And then I have, you know, all these photos, this whole library of them, and then I put them on Later or Buffer. You know, there's lots of different apps that you can use. But and then I just get a push notification when it's time to post it. It's like the easiest thing. I mean, yes, it takes more time than not doing anything or just outsourcing it, but I think the return is there. And then secondly, I actually get my staff involved. So, and I don't usually call them staff. I call them my team. Staff is an infection you get.
I've never heard that before, but I love it.
Yeah. So the team will do a photo of patients when they get their glasses, basically at dispense. And we have social media release forms right in the optical, easy to access. And they have a little competition. We do it quarterly and they get a payout if they take the most photos. So that kind of helps to producing content.
Well, I want to talk about one more thing, because at the top of the show, we talked about how you're really putting yourself out there to try to inspire the next generation of doctors to do what you did and open up their own private practice in optometry. And I've seen like the new social media account that you have, I Think I Can. It's full of inspirational messages for young doctors to try to think about doing this adventure on their own. And I saw you're starting a website too. Talk a little bit about that inspiration and what you plan to do with I Think I Can.
So I Think I Can is, it's really, really new. And I don't know exactly what I'm doing with it yet. I've always kind of dreamed of being a consultant or just being a blogger or like, you know, just having this other outlet to tell other people that you can do this. It is not out of reach. You know, don't listen to everyone that tells you it's too hard or impossible, because it's absolutely possible. So I started that. And, you know, so far, it's just kind of like these quotes that I really like that get me going. But I'm looking to make it more content heavy as well. I'm working on doing some things on YouTube and also writing articles for it and just having a, I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but I'm having fun with it. So we'll just see if it, you know, has a life of its own. But the YouTube thing has been a lot of fun. I don't know if you've seen what I've been doing for my practice on YouTube.
I just saw your post about, it was featured in the Salisbury Post, I believe. So I need to look at your videos.
Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. So I decided a few months ago, I'm like, video is the way to go. You know, I've just noticed the trend on Facebook is that you don't even see photos as much anymore. It seems like everything is a video. So I just told myself I need to get good at editing videos and shooting videos. So I have this YouTube account and my goal is to have like, you know, recaps of community events we do and silly fun stuff. But I also really want, I'm experimenting with the thought of doing playlists for the different things that I talk about all day. So you know how it is. You talk about, I say the same thing 10 times a day about dry eye,
yep.
About contact lens care. And I would really, really love to say to a patient, I know that was a lot. You know, we talked about a lot for treating your dry eye. But guess what? We have a YouTube channel and there's a playlist called Dry Eye. And you can hear me saying the exact same things I did in my exam room at home in case you have any questions about what we talked about. So, you know, anyway, that's a new thing that I'm working with.
That's such a good idea. And have you found the video editing process been as far as a learner? I mean, is this something that other docs you think can easily splash into?
I think it's absolutely doable. It just takes time. You know, it's not anything that you can't do. iMovie is what I'm personally using right now. I don't have anything more sophisticated than that. It takes time and it's a lot to try and tell a story in 3 minutes. And it does take a creative element, but then the technical element of it is somewhat somewhat difficult as well to just to get used to how that all works. And then you also feel silly recording in front of other people. So it's hard to get over that as well.
Well, what I've seen, like just from talking to you today, there's all these challenges where you're like, okay, you're working and you're taking that class as an MBA, you're doing all your own social media, like you're doing this video thing. But whenever there's something that's daunting, it's like, ah, you can do it. So
yeah, I kind of think I can do anything.
So, well, I hope that inspires me because I have been a little scared of video. I'm not going to lie. Every time I do it, I feel so awkward and uncomfortable. So it makes me feel better that someone who's doing it well also feels awkward and uncomfortable.
Oh my gosh. I feel so awkward. And, but the beauty of it is that you get to edit out all the ums and the so's and the filler words. So you can take control of how you come across.
Well, if you're listening to the podcast today and you think, boy, I would really love if Dr. Denton could help mentor me or if I could follow along with her journey, what's the best way for other ODs and OD students to reach out to you?
So email me at drmelaniedenton@gmail.com would be perfect. And I would jump at the chance to mentor or talk to anyone.
Thank you so much for your time today. We're super excited to see what you do next. And you're always welcome on the show if you ever have something inspirational you want to share. Definitely Daryl and I are some of your biggest fans. We've been dying to get you on the show for a while now.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. And I am a big fan of both of you as well.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast. And remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.